Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 90. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, author, blogger, speaker, and coach, Susan Vogt. After the conversation in this episode, I'll report on new services we're offering. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. I've been a colleague of Susan's for at least two decades. Because of her numerous books, blogs, and personal way of life, she has been honored as a champion of simple living. See the link in the show notes for her personal profile, as well as her website. In a recent email, she said to me, "As Link begins, I'll give you a sneak peek at this year's plan. My original idea was to continue pruning my office space. I'll still do that, but I came up with a partner effort that is more interior and perhaps more challenging. In the spirit of letting go of the anger I've been carrying around for over a year of politics, I want to learn to love my enemy." That's not the best way to put it, but because I don't think of those different political views from mine as an enemy, but I do want to try to understand them better. I'm currently seeking a few honest people who are willing to enter into a friendly dialogue with me about our political differences. The goal is not to persuade or convert, but just to understand. As you can probably well tell by reading my blog, I lean liberal. If you or someone you know leans conservative, I'd like to have a civil, friendly dialogue with you. Susan and I have been talking before in episodes 39 and 40 about her ministry and her innovative Lenten disciplines. Links to those episodes are given in the show notes. Now, here's Susan, recently recorded. Well, Susan, you and I have had a couple of good conversations in the past, and we've talked about alternative Lenten practices. And most of them are interesting, but they're kind of traditional, like giving up clutter for Lent and cleaning up and those kinds of things. But this year, you come up with a new idea about how to practice for Lent. Now, you've talked in the past about, you know, changing attitudes for Lent, but this is really something unusual. Would you give us a little background about what you do with your ministry to families and how this new idea evolved for you, and then we'll get into the details a little later?
Okay, sure. Well, as you said, for past Lents, I've usually tried to think of different ways that would help me become a better person and simplify my life and be sacrificial. Like one Lent, I tried to spend no money, no cash other than for food, clothing, and shelter, food and shelter, basically. Another Lent, I tried to create no waste, so I was really watching to recycle as much as possible. But this year, I have found myself to be consumed, overly consumed, probably, with the political partisanship in our country. And I have felt that it's not been a healthy and holy thing for me, because I found myself feeling angry at times and stereotyping people who took different political positions than I did, and then observing just the state of our country and the partisanship and divisions and angry words that I've been hearing around me in mostly the news media, somewhat on Facebook, although I take that with a grain of salt. I found myself just feeling very disturbed about not only the partisanship, but how I could be more loving and more understanding of people who had a different political position than myself. And so, for full disclosure, that I voted for Hillary, and so a person who voted for Trump may not feel as concerned about these things as I am. But I wanted to sort of clean out my mind and emotional state of some of the frustration and feelings of disparagement that were coming up in me, that I wanted to really understand where folks who are good, decent people, but have different political viewpoints on me, how they got to feel that way so that I could love them better.
And so I understand you put out some feelers and asked people to engage you.
Yes. Yes. What I did was on my blog and on a newsletter that I edit, and just in general as I was talking with people, I'd say, do you know anyone who is a Republican and or voted for Trump? Because I, like most people, found that I live to a great extent in a bubble, and my bubble of friends are people that pretty much agree with me. And so I thought I needed to try to find folks who I believed were good people who had who were concerned about the good of our country, who were generous and kind people, but who had come to different conclusions as I do about who to vote for. And so I got responses from some people, and it was I decided to follow up on it. I had actually several questions that I tried to ask them, and I had some very good conversations. It wasn't always easy, but I found that it helped me and is continuing to help me because the process isn't totally finished. But I'm feeling like, oh, that's the reasoning that this person had in why they chose to vote differently than I do. I can tell you that I decided not to interview anyone in my family because I didn't want to poison possible future relationships, since I wanted to still stay close to these folks. And that all the people that I met with, I consider to be decent human beings who I've noticed are generous and are good folks. Most of them I knew previously, but I wasn't always sure of their politics. So some of them came out that they voted for Trump, who had not really been public about that until I had put out the invitation. And since my bubble is primarily Catholic, my work is primarily within the Catholic milieu, because that has been my profession as a family minister for many years. Most of the folks that contacted me were Catholic, but not everyone. So that's sort of the parameters that I put around this, that I only talked with people who I thought were reasonable, who could be thoughtful about it. And I also decided that I would approach this not as a debate or trying to convert the other person, but rather just to try to better understand them. Because I knew that they were good people and they weren't coming at this out of selfish motives or anything that would be evil in the way we usually think of it. So I thought, I want to talk with people who I respect, who I think are rational, but still have come to different conclusions than I do about what is best for the country.
Susan, you're in Kentucky, which is a firmly red state.
Yes.
And you're a left-leaning Roman Catholic, as I'm a progressive-minded Lutheran. And so
yes.
You would probably find some people who are what we used to call one-issue voters, that is, in your case, anti-abortion voters. But what were your conclusions? And secondly, what do you intend to do with this information? I haven't seen it popping up in any of your blogs yet.
Not yet. I'm waiting till I finish Lent because it's still evolving, and I will continue probably to talk to people indefinitely about this. And I also, one thing I'm noticing as I go into this process of what I'm calling civil conversations more, is that I'm not the only one doing this, that I've started, people as I talk to them say, you know, I heard about so-and-so, or this movement, or a group of people who are trying to do the same thing. And so I think the elections, as painful as they have been for much of America, are finding that one of the things we all need to work through, regardless, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever, is that we need to listen more carefully to each other and take off some of the blinders. But perhaps it would help if I told you some of the questions that I asked folks, because I started with what I would consider, oh, wait, you asked me about Kentucky first. Yes, I do live in Kentucky, but Covington, Kentucky, where I live, is borders Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, which is, of course, a bellwether state, most people refer to it as. And so I really identify with Greater Cincinnati, which includes both Kentucky and Ohio. But the local politicians that I relate with are Kentucky ones. So back to the what questions I asked. Well, I started out with what values do you hold most dear? Because I wanted to establish a base, possibly, of common values. I wanted to hear what others said was most important to them, because I had this presumption that probably most of the folks I would be talking with would have a lot of the same root values as I did. And in fact, what people usually said is they started out with family, that I love my family, I want what's best for my family, I will be loyal to my family, and I will sacrifice and do whatever is needed for my family, and unconditional love kinds of things. And people often also said that they try to be a good, honest, and caring person. And I already knew this about most of the folks I was talking with. And several people mentioned that a value that is really important to them is integrity, to try to be honest and truthful and let my actions match my beliefs and my words. And so I could say in response to that, yeah, this is what I believe too. Those are really important things to me. Those are rooting values that I hold most dear. And I think having that common grounding perhaps was helpful, although many of these people I already had a relationship, a friendship with, so it wasn't a surprise. But I think it was good to voice that so that we knew we were on the same page in that regard. But then I asked, well, what led you to vote for Trump? And that's where, of course, we differ. And I summarized the responses. And in fact, I should tell you that I met with with five different individuals and two different groups. And the individuals clearly said they all voted for Trump. The groups were mixed, but they leaned towards being Trump voters, although not everyone identified themselves as that. And so, but what commonly was said is that people were voting for a change, that they felt Washington is corrupt. They wanted to get rid of career politicians who can't get anything done because they are beholden to lobbyists, and the lobbyists have money, and they need that to run for re-election. And so it was that a corrupt system that really bothered a lot of them. They felt that, so it wasn't so much particular issues, but it was more that things are broken in Washington. We're not getting anywhere, and that's, therefore, if we can shake things up, and they thought Trump would shake things up, that's what they were voting for, a change. Now, you mentioned the abortion issue, and I should say that because most of the folks I talked to were Catholic, and the abortion issue is important to that constituency, as it is to me, that did come up fairly often in the people I talked with, but not everyone. And that led to a discussion of what is pro-life, because often there is a stereotype in the Catholic Church that pro-life is primarily anti-abortion. And I could agree with people that I am not in favor of abortion. I don't think that's the way to solve a problem pregnancy. But for me, pro-life is much broader than that, and also includes all of the health care issues that keep people alive, care for the poor and the needy. It extends to the death penalty. It involves education, all those things that can give people a decent human life. So it's not just anti-abortion, but pro-birth and pro-helping folks create a life that is fulfilling and meaningful to them. So the abortion was, in fact, I heard from not everyone, but a couple people said, we really had problems with Trump the person. We didn't really like his style. We didn't believe everything he said, but we were voting for the Supreme Court. And so that's how they dealt with the issue of, I think, a conflict within themselves of, the personality of Trump is not that appealing to us. We don't like a lot of things he says. But since he is a Republican, he will put in a Supreme Court justice that would be more anti-abortion, pro-life. So those are some of the things. Now, some people also objected to the overregulation that has their perception of Washington is that it's the government in Washington is that it's overregulated. And then I started to notice something that only in hindsight did I realize that. More often than not, the individuals I was talking with had an entrepreneurial side to them. They might be a landlord, they might be in private medical practice, some were musicians. And so it was, I thought, aha, regulation is personally affecting them and disturbing what their livelihood is, or making it more complicated. And so I understood that perhaps if I had a different group of folks that I was talking with who were not entrepreneurial or didn't have those connections, maybe that would not have been as big a concern. One or two people said the big government, which is what they think of as the Democratic stance, keeps people lazy, and that has to do with welfare. One person said, I see people just sitting around on the couch all day watching TV and drinking beer. And they get money from the government, and it's just not fair. Then another person referred to the immigration mess. And I could say, well, yeah, if my experience was I go into a rental property I own and I see people sitting around all day on the couch watching TV and drinking beer and they get money anyway, I think, I can understand why that would inform their politics and why they'd want to have the government deal with that. So it was interesting to hear the reservations about Trump as a person, but people then would counter that with, well, those are just his words. He's a successful businessman. I think he would act differently. And he's an outsider who will shake things up. He will drain the swamp. And I could agree with them that in some ways there is waste in government and that I don't want our Congress people beholden to the lobbyists and money. And so we could find some common ground on there. And what several people and I ended up coming to realize is that we had a lot of the same values and hopes for our country, but different methodologies about how to achieve that. And then several of the people said, oh, yes, the checks and balances of our system will rein in Trump's weaknesses. And so that's another way they reconciled how the things that they didn't like about Trump or his positions would be okay because we have checks and balances in the democratic process. We have Congress and we have the Supreme Court, and all of that will be able to rein in any exaggerations or missteps. So that's all very complicated, and I didn't always agree with the people. But I had decided in the beginning that I wasn't going to try to debate with them and refute things that they said, even though at times I wondered whether I should. And that brings me to the media. That one thing I asked them near the end was, well, where do you get the information that you've got? Because I found that several times folks were quoting to me things that I knew, at least from my sources, were not factually accurate. And rather than start to debate that, I said, where do you get your news? And most often people said Fox News or local TV or the Drudge Report. These were not unintelligent, uninformed people. They were people who paid attention to the news, and they didn't get it all from Facebook. So I respected that. But it's a I get my news primarily from NPR and PBS, especially the Charlie Rose Show. I read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, but not as much. And so we were all trying to sort out our news, but getting it from different sources. And that is something that I think is very instructive to me for the future, because although I would say their news sources are biased, I always had to catch myself and say, well, I think they would probably consider my news sources biased. And even though I don't think that's true, you know, you always think your own way, your own bubble is the best and the most accurate. Still, I think we need to probably pay attention to what is the fake news And who do you believe and why? Is it just, as people have often said, confirmation bias, that even if you hear something that doesn't quite make sense, if it confirms what you already were thinking, you're more inclined to agree with it than a very different opinion that's been expressed or a different fact that you hear? But I haven't given you much time to talk, Jerry. Do you have? I have more I could say, but are you? Is this raising any questions for you?
Well, sure. I mean, for example, Susan, you're obviously a very good listener, but from what I can hear, you're not a terrific conversationalist because you didn't stick up for yourself. I was suggesting that you debate them, but on the other hand, you have some really valid points. You come from a strongly Christian point of view. You know the difference between good medical care and no medical care, for example.
Yes.
And so that's my immediate reaction, but I want to move on because I want to hear more of what you have to say, and that is, have you found anybody since the last 50 days who have expressed regrets?
Let me get to that in a moment, but first let me respond to what you said about reacting or responding to the different opinions I heard, because my husband and I actually had a debate about this, because he said, well, when somebody says something that you don't think is true, I think you should, counter it. And I said, and he said that pretty strongly, and he may be right, because he's often right. But two reasons that I didn't engage in that is, one, that the ground rules I laid down in the beginning was I wanted to understand them, and that allowed them to be open to me more honestly, I think, rather than thinking that we were going to have, point counterpoint, and that also I didn't always have facts at my fingertips that I could, in a neutral way, state something that I thought would not be offensive or sound like I was putting them down. But I was ready if any of them said they wanted to hear my opinion about things or why I voted for Hillary, that I was ready to say that. I was a little disappointed that nobody asked me that, that nobody said, well, what's your position on this? Because I would have happily shared that. But it may be that the way I structured the interview didn't lead to that. But I am a strong supporter of the Obamacare, the ACA, and I am a strong supporter of immigrants and welcoming the stranger, the immigrant, the refugee. My faith leads me to many things that, as a Christian, that is the opposite of what these other mostly Christians were saying their faith leads them to. And it was hard to refrain myself at times. Did they have any regrets? No, and I was surprised by that, because I thought back in November when they voted for Trump that they probably would have said, oh, gee, I didn't know he was going to appoint the head of the EPA, a person that wanted to, Pruitt, who wants to dismantle it. And I'm also an environmentalist, and I have a lot of background in that and knowledge about it, and that really bothered me. But I thought that maybe they would regret, because of some of the appointments that Trump has made, or things he has said or done, or the whole ban on immigration, that they would say, well, I didn't realize he'd go that far, or I didn't realize this. But no, people pretty much, you know, held their ground and said, even several directly said, I'm very pleased with who he's appointed. I'm very pleased with the statements he's made. And in fact, one person said, well, Democrats have been obstructing everything that Trump wants to do. And I did respond to that with, you know, the Republicans, under the direction of Mitch McConnell, made a very concerted and intentional plan to obstruct everything Obama did, which was much more direct than what's been happening so far in the early days of the Trump administration. So I did make that comment because I didn't want it to go unchallenged. And when one person asked me, well, what media do you think would be good to listen to? And so I told them what I listened to, and that I listened to public radio, NPR, a lot, because I think that's a balanced and professional airing of different sides in an educated way. And that person said, well, maybe I'll have to see if I have a radio. And another person said, when I talked about a podcast, what's a podcast? So there's, you know, some things that I take for granted as ways to inform myself are not necessarily the way other people are informing themselves. And although this wasn't the case for everyone, because some were informing themselves in a more balanced way, but still had the stance that they did. And it was a hard thing for me to listen to. I don't think many of them had regrets, because they're still waiting for the good things they hoped for to come to be.
Well, thank you, Susan. Anything else you'd like to mention in this conversation?
One thing I ended up asking people when it came up is, because a lot of folks said, who were my age, would say, well, my children have a different political opinion than I do, or I have a relative who disagrees with me. And I said, well, how do you handle that family tension? Because I can recognize that in my own extended family. And what normally they said is, we've decided to avoid talking politics because it just becomes too argumentative for us, and we don't want to hurt our family relationship. And one person said, well, we talk about sports, because that's sort of neutral. Or we talk about fun things and family things, and we just avoid talking about politics. Although in some families, what they've ended up doing is avoiding those people. And I think that's a sad situation. And another thing that came up sort of as an aside that I realized only afterwards is that a number of people who had very strong political opinions, they may have been impacted by the fact that they were also upset about local politics. Because several people said, well, I didn't like this bridge, or the way they handled the traffic situation locally, or, you know, I live in a very corrupt city, and that's, you know, bothers me so much. And I think their concerns about the corruption in their local politics bled over to national politics and maybe influenced that more than even the national scene. You know, they generalized from what was happening locally to say, well, see, they waste money here and they've made bad decisions here where I live, and I bet it's the same in Washington. So, and maybe they're right. Although I think there was a lot of exaggeration in that, because I know a lot of very reputable and honest and hard-working local politicians, and some in Washington, too.
So do you anticipate a series of blogs or maybe some articles coming out of this in April?
Yes. Yes, I'm definitely planning on blogging on it, on my Living Lightly blog, which one can reach at, it's Susan Vogt, that's spelled V-O-G-T, SusanVogt.net /blog. I would also ask, how do you see our government building the common good? And what disappoints you or angers you about the Democratic Party or its candidates? How does your faith fit in? And do you have any ideas for the future about the way we could best go forward together? People didn't really give me too much about the faith part or going forward. And they covered what disappoints or angers them about the Democratic Party when they talked about why they voted for Trump. And some of that was they didn't trust Hillary, that they thought that she was a hypocrite, that they thought that she was in bed with Wall Street and things like that. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, in bed with Wall Street, and you don't think Trump is? Look who he's appointed. Or she's, too much of an insider, you know, and indeed she's been involved in politics, and Trump has not. But in terms of their reasons seemed pretty soft for, you know, like, well, she had those all that email stuff going on, and we couldn't trust her because of things like that. Well, and they trust Trump more? I'm thinking to myself. But those are the kind of questions that I thought, how can I refute that without getting into an argument? Because these are friends, too. So that was hard. And if it was in person, and some of the conversations were in person, and then I felt like I could go into more because we could follow up. If it was on phone or one of them was an email exchange, it was harder to do that.
Thank you so much, Susan. Peace be with you.
Okay. Peace be with you too, Jerry.
You've been listening to my conversation with author, blogger, speaker, and coach Susan Vogt. I feel this much the same dilemma as Susan, wanting to understand why people vote for a regressive government. I don't have the patience that Susan has. I will not spend my money, time, or energy with fundamentalists, social, political, or religious, people who have no interest in what I have to say. I willingly engage conservative people who will listen as well as talk, who are open to what others different than themselves have to say, who are open-minded to some degree. You may want to listen to my recent conversation with Cecile Andrews, affectionately known as the Queen of Community Conversations. See the show notes for a link to episode 87. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review on iTunes. Well, we have lots of news to share. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book has been released. Lee's the executive director of Jubilee One Earth Economics. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advanced copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and volume 2 on podcasts. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. We've started a new service in 2017 called Simpler Living Sanity Suggestions. Amid all the changes in our country, we offer a new suggestion each week, not as a placebo, but as encouragement to do something for yourself, your family, your community that may counteract any negative stuff that may be coming or happening now. The suggestions are given in the weekly nudge. The weekly nudge and the weekly digest together make up the Simple Living Works blog. Also, a link to all the sanity suggestions is given in the show notes. I started a little campaign recently as a response to regressive policies in D.C. and many of the states called I Buy Blue, How About You? Click the link in the show notes or subscribe to the Simple Living Works blog. Simply send us an email headed subscribe blog, then confirm your subscription when a confirmation email arrives. We've changed our long-standing alternate celebrations to non-conform freely celebrations because the terms alternate and alternative have been compromised by the new buzzwords alternative facts in D.C. I've started a short series called, appropriately enough, Banishing Fake News. You can also read each little installment in the Simple Living Works blog or read most of it on the Simple Living Works site. See the link in the show notes. I hope these new short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. After reading them, your comments are welcome. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for almost a year now and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on simplelivingworks.org. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5, or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The Weekly Nudge focuses only on efforts of Simple Living Works. The Weekly Digest includes the latest posts from colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to the Simple Living Works blog. The much more complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly digest are given in both the Weekly Nudge and the Weekly Digest. We hope you'll check it out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. I've lined up interesting thinkers and activists for this year, including soon Hazel Henderson of Ethical Markets Media. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to the podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. We can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, the Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully an educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can.